worship for all ages today, I have a story to tell you. This is about Anansi the spider. Anansi is a trickster, and that means he's not an ordinary spider. He's a storyteller who goes up to the sky god to buy his stories to share with the world. He's a mythical figure in the folk tales of the Ashanti people of West Africa. Stories about Anansi have been told for many years throughout West Africa and wherever West African people have traveled and settled. And that means all over the Caribbean and the southern United States, too. This story comes to us from the telling by Jessica York. Anansi the spider loves to spin a tale. He can keep you spellbound for hours with stories full of wonder, stories full of fun, and stories full of facts, too. Because he is so nosy, Anansi knows almost everything. So one day, he went to the house of the sun god, and he said, "Oh, mighty sun god, you see everything and everyone. Won't you share your great wisdom with me? I'll use it wisely to spin tales of wonder and fun for everyone." And the sun god replied, "Anansi, I will put all the wisdom in the world here in this clay pot. But you must share this wisdom with everyone." Anansi promised to do so. Anansi took the pot home. He looked deep into the clay pot, and sure enough, he saw sights he had never seen before. He heard sounds he did not know existed. "This is too good to give away. I will keep this great wisdom for myself," Anansi thought. "I must hide it," he said, and he looked around for a good hiding place. Anansi decided to climb to the top of the tallest tree. There he would tie up the clay pot, and the leafy branches would hide it. He started to climb the tree, holding the pot in front of him. But the climbing was oh so hard. Have you ever climbed a tree while holding a pot? Anansi wished he had 9 limbs. His youngest daughter was outside, and she saw what a hard time Anansi was having. "Father, it would be easier if you tied the pot to your back," she said, "and then all your limbs would be free for climbing." Do you think Anansi was happy to get good advice from his daughter? Think again. He said, "She's right. That would be easier. But why is it some young pup thinks of this when I, who possess all the wisdom of the world, did not think of it?" Anansi got so angry that he threw the pot to the ground. And oh, all the wisdom of the world came flowing out of the pot. Some falls here, some falls there. No one gets all the wisdom, but everyone gets some. And this is why, even today, wisdom is everywhere. And you know what? If you listen to the stories, stories spun from many different storytellers all around the world, you will hear it.
Let us open our hearts, still our minds, and enter a time of prayer. Let us call forth and hold in our hearts the stories of all who have come before us, the memories of those who are with us today, and the hope for tomorrow and for all of those who will come after us. Let us be thankful for this opportunity for healing, forgiveness, and reconciliation. while knowing that we can never, should never, forget what has brought us here today. Let us be glad that voice has not only been given to those whose sorrow and pain were their companions in this faith, but that the stories told by those voices have been received with the goal of redemption and understanding. Let us call upon that light which shines in each of us to give us the strength to walk together into the future and do the work that is necessary and which does not end here today. Let us have the wisdom to lovingly have the conversations we need to have with each other, that we must have with each other in order to grow this faith in radical love and inclusion. Amen.
Our first reflection this morning, I want to thank Sandy for working with all these different media to present, to give you some visual images of folks as well as their voices this morning. She's really worked very hard. But our first reflection this morning is a testimony given by Drew Farrar at a worship service last May at First Unitarian Universalist in Portland, Oregon, where he serves as the music director.
I am that I am. I am male. I am cisgender. I am queer. I am Christian. I am young-ish. I am a musician. I am black. Of these, there is nothing that you notice more than that I am black, although that I am male might come close. There is nothing that excites you more than that I am black, although that I am queer might come close. There is nothing that you are more fearful of than that I am black, although that I am Christian might come close. I don't say any of this with any shame. I love my blackness. The idea that blackness has been resilient enough to survive whiteness generation after generation, century after century, is enough to make me want to flaunt my blackness loudly and proudly. That is, unless there is any tax-funded badge-bearing firearm nearby. No, I love my blackness, but I am aware of it constantly. I am aware even of your whiteness responding to it constantly. I am aware even in this moment that whiteness is urging some of you to figure out how you will pin me down after the service to tell me that I am wrong about you. I love my blackness, but I am aware that it has been diluted by a need to move more easily throughout the white life I have built around myself. Yes, my blackness has been diluted in certain ways so that I can move more easily. More easily, that is, for you. The music that the choir will sing this morning is challenging for me. It was challenging for me when I reluctantly chose it last November to pair with the original sermon topic, which was Peace Like a River. And it is even more challenging for me now. The song Peace Like a River is a Negro spiritual that white people turned into a children's song because of how easily it lends itself toward added verses and silly hand movements. But it is a spiritual out of the American slavery era, rather the American slavery tradition, that talks about how black slaves needed to put up a front before their white oppressors for fear that expressing their true emotions would have dire or even fatal results. You see, rivers look peaceful from the land, but they are extremely busy and often violent under the surface. Peace, like a river, is about showing peace and feeling rage. Mack Wilberg is a white Mormon arranger who has set this piece absolutely beautifully, but in a way that clearly demonstrates he doesn't get it. And in Come in Peace is extraordinarily well written and really fun to sing. However, it is written by a white Canadian man, Brian Tate, who has made his entire living by imitating black and brown music for white use. I fully realized that programming this music was my choice. But I also realized that I could easily hide, knowing that you wouldn't have known any of this if I didn't tell you. Further, part of my job is to spend your money tangled in white expressions of fear and scarcity mentality very carefully. And sometimes that means choosing the piece that is already in the library over purchasing something more ethically secure. Indeed, you did just hear me suggest that a common function of whiteness is choosing financial security over ethical security. Now, none of this should discourage you from enjoying the music this morning. Again, it has been skillfully crafted, and the Chalice Choir has worked very hard to prepare it so that it might bring added meaning to your worship. However, when I enter this white space, these are the sorts of things I get to sit with and wrestle with, while most of you are able to sit and remain oblivious, and contently so. When you ask me what white privilege is, I would say it is this power you have to not notice. When you ask me what white supremacy is, I would say it is this power that you have to be angry when I notice. Just a few more weary days and then I'll fly away to a home where joy shall never end. I'll fly a home where joy shall never end. I'll fly. Fly away in the morning when I die. Hallelujah, by and by. Oh, I'll fly away.
Our next reflection, Black Joy, by Reverend Kimberly Quinn Johnson, begins with a poem called Joy Unspeakable by Barbara A. Holmes. Joy unspeakable is not silent. It moans, hums, and bends to the rhythm of the dancing universe. For our free African ancestors, joy unspeakable is drum talk. For enslaved Africans during the Middle Passage, joy unspeakable is the surprise of living one more day. For our Africans in bondage in the Americas, joy unspeakable is the moment of mystical encounter when God tiptoes into the hush arbor. Joy unspeakable is how I got over after swimming to the other shore of a swollen Ohio River when you know that you can't swim. When theologian Barbara A. Holmes talks about joy unspeakable, she's talking specifically about contemplative practices of the Black church that have sustained Black people in America through suffering and survival. More than referring to a particular church or denomination, this experience is collective and trans-historical. It's also a different expression of Black religion than I'm expected to exhibit as a Black woman. On more than one occasion, I've had a particular mode of Black worship projected onto me, the more charismatic modes of Black worship that we're so familiar with, the shout, the stomp, the song. That particular style of Black worship sometimes strikes me as a caricature of joy, a shallow stereotype. I see this in the expectation that more Black worship will bring more lively singing, more rhythmic clapping, more energetic worship. I see it in the anxiety that Black worship will bring more lively singing, more rhythmic clapping, more energetic worship. The shout, the stomp, the song. But this caricature, this stereotype, is a narrow sliver of the complexity and the richness of Black spirituality and Black worship. The modes of Black spirituality that are most powerful, nourishing, and nurturing for me aren't the stomp, the shout, or the song. Instead, I think of the rock, the sway, the bend, the moan, the hmm. And I think of these things done in community. I marvel that in the midst of sadness and sorrow, in the midst of feeling the effects of generations of trauma wrought by racism and white supremacy, we can still find joy in each other. We are finding joy in each other. I call it Black joy because I am Black, and it is a joy that I have been familiar with my whole life. It is the joy that I have learned from Black people. It is a joy created through our collective healing, our laying down of burdens to be picked up and shared by our people, our community. This is not joy in spite of suffering, a mask put on to hide pain and armor put on to push through pain. This is an embrace, holding and soothing us in the suffering. This Black joy is joy created through our being together. This Black joy reminds me that I'm not alone, that trouble doesn't always last, and that I'm held and carried forward by a power beyond what I can comprehend. I call it Black joy, but I want to offer it to the extent that is mine to offer to this faith. One of my gifts to Unitarian Universalism is the suggestion that joy is ours. We are the people who commit to justice, equity, and compassion. We are the people who aspire to world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. We are the people who affirm our interdependence with each other and the universe itself. I want to challenge Unitarian Universalism and Unitarian Universalists to claim joy. Unitarian Universalist joy will require a different way of imagining ourselves and a different way of being with each other. Claiming the possibility of Unitarian Universalist joy requires making space for surprises that Holmes describes. Claiming the possibility of Unitarian Universalist joy requires slowing down to hear the talk of the drum, pausing to move to the rhythms of the drum. Unitarian Universalist joy requires opening to the possibility of mystical encounter. Unitarian Universalist joy requires embodying this faith differently than many of us are accustomed to.
Every day in our world, people are feeling vulnerable, frightened, and harmed. For those of us who are Black, Indigenous, people of color, the effects of racism and oppression are an everyday lived reality, and these feelings are not new. For others, this can be a time of hard awakening to the realities that have existed for a long time, and to new and heightened racial violence and policies targeting the most vulnerable. For all of us, the call of this moment is real. And as Unitarian Universalists, we are invited and challenged every day to live more deeply into our faith.
And every day, our people, our churches, you are responding to that invitation. We are learning to live with a vision of the beloved community in the face of white supremacy and fear. We are learning to confront these things in our own hearts, lives, and in our congregations.
If we, as UUs, are going to be ready to meet the challenge and accept our invitation to build a new way, we must do it together. We know that, as June Jordan said, we are the ones we've been waiting for.
Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism is one of the most exciting ways that our faith is answering this call. As a national ministry for and by Black-identified Unitarian Universalists, Blue embodies a liberating community of all ages, a community that lifts up the lives and the stories and the leadership of those who've been marginalized and silenced, a community that brings hope when hope is hard to find, and a community that calls us all to wrestle with the gap between our theology and our practice in the world.
On behalf of the Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism Organizing Collective, thank you. Thank you for taking part in the UUA's Promise and Practice campaign to support the UUA board's decision of $5.3 million commitment to our work. I also want to thank all of the Black UUs who are a part of our community.
And I want to thank Lena and all of the other leaders of Blue for their vision, courage, and tremendous ministry. I want to thank the board for their bold financial commitment to Blue.
Amen to that.
We are on our way. And today, Lena and I are asking you to join us in fulfilling this promise with your financial support. We need your help. We at the UUA, we have already set aside $1 million from the UUA endowment towards this campaign. And we are thrilled that two very generous Unitarian Universalists, Julie and Brad Bradford, have offered a $1 million match for congregational giving to help us reach our goal. All of your gifts are needed and appreciated. And if your congregation reaches the threshold of $10 per member, or however you count the souls that you serve, your gift will be doubled. If you believe, like I do, that our faith must become radically inclusive, justice-centered, multiracial, and multigenerational, then there is no better way to advance that vision than through your support for Blue.
The power and promise of Unitarian Universalism is waking up to meet fear and hate with radical imagination, transformative partnership, resilience, and joy. We make it possible through our commitment and our generosity. Thank you for your support.
Thank you.
Good morning again. This reflection is called There Is More Love Somewhere by Dr. Glenn Thomas Rideout, who is director of music at First Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Ann Arbor, Michigan. He's been there since 2007. Thank you for this opportunity. Last summer at General Assembly, I walked out of the sanctuary we had made from the convention space. As tired as I was, I returned more and more to the deeply introverted default of self. I passed a woman who stopped to talk with me. Many religious professionals who have led morning worship service know that this is truly where the work begins. She walked right up to me and said, "Dr. Rideout." Because she had enough grace to remind me of my title, she gave me the opportunity to resume my church face and posture. She held my hands as if we'd known each other for the longest time. She looked into my eyes and said, "You know what? I always sing that song, There Is More Love Somewhere. There is more love right here. There is more love right here. I'm gonna keep on, 'cause I found it. There is more love right here." I don't understand why it is that we don't sing it here at GA. We've already found a community of love. And because she had enough compassion and grace to call me Dr. Rideout, she had given me enough time and opportunity to summon up a bit of stillness and the weary remnants of my churchman's posture. She looked into my eyes and spoke and sang to me of her own truth. She asked with genuine curiosity why it is that we don't all sing the words that she had come to know. I was compelled to respond to the woman I had just met with, "Thank you for trusting me with that question." And then I explained to her why I thought it was necessary, particularly with the music of people of color. We enter and examine these songs with more curiosity than colonization. I thanked her and I explained that for those of us who live with the privilege of knowing love, it can be difficult to understand the perspective of one who lives without such a privilege. I explained that it can be difficult to understand that lived experience of those who have trouble finding the evidence of love in their immediate vicinity, in their church, in their neighborhood, in their city, in their nation, even in their planet. I thanked her and I explained that for some of those who don't share that privilege of perceiving love right here, moving toward that idea of privilege had become a vital practice of Black faith. I offered that if we, as a spiritual community of Unitarian Universalists populated by well-meaning people, are to mean anything to the lives and deaths of people of color, we must begin by learning, not squelching, the forms of expression that may arise from these living perspectives. And she said, "Thank you. I've never heard it expressed that way. I've never understood it that way. And I will never sing that song that way again." When we inhabit the music, the forms of expressions of people who live their lives along the margins of notice, we must notice that we have entered holy ground, a sacred space of learning, a sacred space of relationship. Thank you. And now with that knowledge, let us sing hymn number 95, There Is More Love Somewhere.